from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning.
Happy Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
Had a wonderful 3-day Labor Day weekend. Watched a lot of college football. And now it is game week for the NFL. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And finally, Josh, it is game week, an actual game week for the Buffalo Bills. But you are listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. And just right away, we're going to kind of get into sort of the question of the day, with it being sort of the last kind of opportunity those of us can have to do this. It is sort of predictions week. You know, me and Josh will be on today and tomorrow.
Last minute predictions.
For the NFL, for the Bills, what have you. I want to hear them. It can even be college football takes. I mean, we've seen some teams play two games. I don't care. Predictions for
Florida
football season.
Florida State. What happened?
They're not good.
I know. What happened? How did it go that
oh, man.
Bad?
I mean, to those of us who could watch the game, I was actually not one of them either. So I had to, like, discover everything through Twitter and then stream. It was a good time.
I want to know where the guy is that made that. The comment on Twitter about a bet he would do if FSU lost.
From what I've seen, he has deleted basically everything.
Yes, and that is
good for him.
That's a cowardly move. Basically, this guy said that he would do something absolutely disgusting that involved eating something out of a Solo cup.
Yep. It's not good.
No, it's not great.
It's like, why would you do that, man?
No, why would you subject yourself to that? But now he's hiding. So. America, brutal. We need to find him.
Hate to see that. Brutal. Yeah, I watched a lot of college football over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I did a little bit of golfing as well.
Clemson looked bad.
Clemson did not look good. I went out for lunch with my mom for her birthday.
Nice. We had a fantasy football draft.
I did three fantasy football drafts within like the last like week.
I did three fantasy football drafts in 24 hours.
Yep. Ours, though, the one we were in?
So fast.
30 minutes.
Yep.
I was playing NCAA while I was doing it. I couldn't have been happier.
It was an 8-man league, and we got through it in 30 minutes. I was terrified because I was on my way home from Stony Brook.
I will clarify.
I was not driving. I was in the back seat doing my draft, and it was very spotty. I got four auto draft picks, four guys that I wanted, just not in the spots that I wanted them.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on the team nonetheless. Doesn't matter where you draft them. As long as you get them on the team, that's what matters.
Welcome to the team, and that is all that matters. But yes, it was a wonderful weekend for many of you as well. It is elite season. It is autumn, not fall. It is autumn.
It's fall.
It's not fall. It's
what is autumn. The difference?
Autumn, it is still somewhat warm. I can still wear shorts. By fall, we're wearing jeans and hoodies.
No one I've ever met has called it autumn.
I hold off as long as I can before I get to the cold season. So I'm like, this is autumn. It's really nice.
No.
That's what September is. September is autumn. Fall is October, November. depending on where you live, because for us, like, winter starts in November.
Exactly. So this is fall.
No, fall is October.
We don't have the luxury of having these little subsections of seasons.
That's exactly what we have.
No, we don't.
Florida doesn't. Florida's like, we have hurricane season and then slightly less warm summer.
And
that's
then
what they have.
Fall.
No, they don't even have that. They have slightly less warm summer.
No.
That's
no.
What they have.
We don't have the luxury of this little subsection of autumn.
That's exactly what we have.
What do you do when you go from winter to spring? Winter, spring.
Wet season.
There's nothing in between.
Wet season.
Because it's Buffalo. You go from winter to spring in approximately 30 seconds.
No, there's a nice middle period where it's just wet season.
No.
Where if you have a birthday in there, you've never experienced a nice outside birthday.
And you said it was nice. And we both have that issue of having April birthdays
and it's wet
in
season.
This awful season.
But I don't want to hear it from you guys.
Is like April, May-ish.
Because yours truly has a birthday in early November. So you're in that period.
You have no.
That's the start of Buffalo winter.
Yeah. Well, no. Zach, what happened when we
the
were
the first snow
six?
Has happened on my birthday.
What happened when we were six?
That was a Zach. Major event.
It was a major event, and we have one of those every 2 years.
That is not true.
You know what happened? You know what happened when we were six? In 2006, it was the October storm. The surprise October storm that we've had six times since then.
There was a key word in there.
Surprise. Yeah, but you know what's happened since then? Six times? More October storms.
Six times? October storm. No. That's the beauty of living in Buffalo. You get to experience the seasons, including their little subsections.
There are no
like
subsections.
Like wet season and autumn.
And you don't get the luxury of calling it autumn. It's just
I do.
Early snow.
Autumn sounds way better than fall. Who came up with fall, by the way? That sounds
because
depressing.
The leaves fall.
Yeah, that's horrible. That is awful.
It is simple and perfect.
There's like three art students that are like, it's so nice and pretty. I'm like, that tree died.
I love
it's fall. Awful.
What are you talking
it's
about?
Awful.
The leaves coming off the trees are the best part of fall.
It looks
great.
It looks nice until you're thinking about it.
You just don't think about it.
Exactly. You just don't think about it.
Just don't think about it.
Speaking of not thinking about it, we got to get to some football here. I have not thought about the Bills all weekend. And a part of me is like, this is good. I'm watching college football. Texas, you know, had a good game against Colorado State. UB beat Lafayette. So, like, they've kind of got, like, this nice groove going. They play in Missouri this weekend, so that won't go well. But it was only until, like, last night when I wasn't really watching the Florida State game and, you know, I'm kind of getting ready for today that I'm like, all right. Like, I mean, we've talked about this for 7-8 months, but here we go. Like, now it's here. And that's sort of why I want to do predictions today, is just because this is sort of the last time, but also we've all talked about it so much. We've all put a lot of thought into this that why not throw out some predictions? So for me, at least, I think a lot of people know where this is going. For me personally, and just in terms of the Bills predictions, I am very bullish on Khalil Shakir. I don't think that's a surprising statement from anybody. But I have gotten to that point over the offseason of I do believe he is a 90-catch guy just due to how well he was at the end of last year and the fact that they have lost Stephon Diggs and Gabe Davis. They have a desperate need for someone to be both a safety valve for Josh Allen, but also just a guy that he can trust that when he needs to make a big play, he throws to Shakir or he throws to somebody. And I think it's going to be Shakir. We've already seen spots throughout Shakir's 2 years in the NFL that Allen trusts him, that he can make big plays. His usage, though, has not been very high. I mean, we've talked about it, Josh, in his stats from last year, where in the first six games, he had five targets. None in game one, and then one for the next five in each game. And then it sort of progressed. Okay, now we're getting to go, I think, as well. While I do think they'll run the ball more than maybe in years past, I think they ran the ball as much as they did last year out of necessity. I don't think that is indicative of what Joe Brady or Sean McDermott wants to do. I think that's just kind of what they had to do to not have a lost season. They really missed the mark on some of their free agent wide receiver acquisitions last season.
I think this is also such a drastically different team that it's so hard to tell what they're going to do this season, because think about it. There's 150 targets.
Mm-hmm.
Or is it catches? I can never remember.
I think it's catches.
I know the number's 150. And I think it's catches. That makes more sense. But it's 150 catches that are going to be dispersed from two players that are now gone.
Mm-hmm.
And those two being Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs. And I have to think that the lion's share of those will be going to Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid. I think if you wanted to break it down percentage-wise or something like that, if you look at Kincaid and Shakir, I think the two of them will get 60%, if not more, of those 150 catches. And I think that's lowballing it. Because you have to already think of what they get and what they got last year, especially in Kincaid's side of things here, because Kincaid was not used nearly as much as Shakir towards the end of the season. I mean, Kincaid had his moments for sure.
But Kincaid ultimately had 73 catches.
Right, but that should go up by 30?
I always get nervous about like doing that because I do think the Bills want to go down the road of everyone eats.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually someone, it could be Shakir, it absolutely could be Kincaid, that eventually just
pops off.
All right, they're the guy.
They're clearly above
they're getting targeted more than everyone else. But, I mean, him already having 73 last year, I think a lot of that also came from the fact that Dawson Knox was not on the field.
Yeah,
he was both injured and stuff like that.
I wonder how much that actually played into it because the way they've always talked about Kincaid is he's a receiver. Think of him as a receiver.
Mm-hmm.
And they've never talked about Dawson Knox that way.
No.
He's never been that type of player. So I think regardless of that injury, I think that progression from Kincaid is what we would have saw because of the injuries, because of the necessity of, hey, nothing else is working. We need to find something new. I think that when you look at this offense, a lot of it is hope from our end. A lot 100%. Of it is hope that 100%. This is what's going to happen.
Because it is just so unknown.
Right. But the majority is hope. But the other part of it is just basic math. I mean, they're not going to throw the ball a lot less, I don't think. I think they're going to throw the ball less for sure, but it's not going to be this astronomical difference.
Yeah, last year, Allen threw the ball 579 times.
Maybe 550 this year.
I
don't know.
I'm up and down. I'm somebody that thinks he could have 600 passing attempts.
Really?
Because they are going to use the short passing game more. It is not
right.
going
okay.
to be the long ball, mm-hmm. which we saw a lot under Ken Dorsey before, obviously, he was fired.
I just think, I don't even think it's going to be a massive difference down. I just think it might. You might see that run game a little bit more early on in the season. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, as they're sort of trying to get everything together.
Yeah, as you're, because that's something else that I've thought of this whole offseason is this team is not going to be, and a lot of people have talked about it too, like, you know, the big names in ESPN and whatnot, of this offense might not look great right away. But by week 7, week 8, it should be humming along. Like
I think
well-oiled
Mina Kimes
machine.
Of ESPN was really big on this.
And I think at this early point in the season, when you're not, you know, humming along as that well-oiled machine through weeks 1 through 5, let's say, I think your crutch kind of is, hey, James Cook can run the ball. Ray Davis can pound through that offensive line when you're in the red zone and have nothing else working and get you into the end zone. And, hey, Josh Allen still has his legs too, so there's always that. So
yeah, I mean, a big part of that is Josh Allen is your quarterback. You know, Patrick Mahomes was able to make it work with like a wide receiver room that was actively harmful to the offense.
Right.
You know,
Kadarius Toney's not there anymore, though, sadly.
He's on the practice squad, right?
Well,
is he?
Oh, I think so.
Or is it just Justin Ross? I know they brought one of them back. Oh, he may be not.
I don't think so.
I don't think he is, actually. No, that's probably wrong on me. But I look at this team, though, and even last year, and this is why I do talk about, I think they went to the run game so much, and we've mentioned the free agent acquisitions they made. Deonte Hardy had 21 targets. Sherfield had 22. Hardy had 15 catches to Sherfield's 11. They were complete and utter non-factors on the team, and that was your wide receiver 3 and 4. And so that's where, for me, it's like I don't love what they've done. And a lot of it for me is I wish they would have drafted young guys in the last 2 years in rounds 3 through 5 and not Justin Shorter, who I think they drafted more to be a special teams guy and not ever a wide receiver. Look what the Raiders did. The moment he was cut from the Bills, he was picked up by the Raiders on their practice squad, and they changed his position to tight end.
Which I think is super interesting. I'm kind of curious.
I think that is a desperation pull, not by the Raiders, by Shorter.
I wonder, though. I mean, he is a bigger guy, and in the situation the Raiders are in, they kind of need
You can argue they kind of need somebody. So, they already have two great tight ends, though. Potentially.
Oh, right. With Brock Bowers, I forgot about.
Potentially. Him. Yeah. But so, like,
real
where,
quick, on the,
you know.
On the Kadarius Toney thing, I don't think he's on their practice squad. I can't find that. But all of the headlines that I'm reading are from, like, a few days ago, two, three, 4 days ago. The Chiefs GM, Brett Veach, says, quote, "I would do it all over again" when talking about the Toney trade.
See, now that makes zero sense.
What is that?
That
is a massive question.
Zero sense.
I know this is really off base. It's just, why would you ever want to make that trade again?
I just...
What did he do for them? He made maybe one big catch.
I just wish the Eagles and the 49ers could have finished the job so that we could talk about the Chiefs honestly.
Yes.
I'm not saying they've lucked into two Super Bowls. That is incorrect. They've had an amazing defense. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes is incredible. Travis Kelce might be the
last
best pass-catching tight end of all time.
Last year, I'm not saying... Like you said, you're not saying they lucked into a Super Bowl, but it was a very lucky year.
Their inability to scout or really even develop the wide receiver position through this era with Patrick Mahomes is astounding. It is stunning how bad they are at that position.
Right. Like
with Andy Reid at head coach and Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, they cannot add somebody on that. And that's why I got so frustrated on draft weekend when everyone was freaking about Worthy. And I'm like, guys, look at what Brett
Veach
has done.
Look at their track record. Yeah,
their track record tells you, actually, if they like a receiver, you maybe shouldn't.
Well, and it's funny, too, because that's probably, at this point, one of the only things the Bills have on the Chiefs is the ability to draft well and find these hidden talents.
Well, and that's the one thing that I think the Chiefs actually do better than the Bills significantly is where the Bills get gems that are like that's a solid starter. The gems the Chiefs find are superstars.
That's, well...
Like, you know, like, but Rasul Douglas is a nice find. You get him in a trade.
No, but I'm
Trent McDuffie's like one of the best young cornerbacks in football.
Right, but you have to think of where the Chiefs were in that position to take him. They were in a spot in that draft where... He was a first-round pick.
It was late first round.
Yeah, so...
I mean, it's before the Bills pick, but yeah, it's late first round.
Was it before the...
They traded up, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But right. That's my thing.
Well, okay, that's a little different. I thought that was one of their, you know,
the
second
Bills,
to last pick of the first
Bills
round.
The Bills are very good to, like, get solid guys that can just find spots on a roster. And
well,
I love
I'm
it.
Talking,
it's
but
it's
I'm
good.
Looking, I'm looking more at the late round stuff. You know, yeah. Matt Milano being a fifth round pick. Taron Johnson being sixth.
I think a fifth or sixth round pick.
Sixth?
Yeah.
Like, names like that that are consistent key contributing members of the team that are even borderline... You know, great player like Taron Johnson, probably one of the most overlooked Bills players. But
I saw Jody Biasi tweet about it too.
Yeah,
I
Jeremy and Joe
right.
were talking about that earlier. He's one of the best players on the team, but you kind of forget about him sometimes.
And, you forget about him because he's good at his job.
Right, exactly. For a cornerback, you don't want to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
But my point there is I just think that when you look at the history of these drafts for these teams over the past few years. Yeah, the Chiefs have their guys, but look at all the guys they've missed on.
Well, and
look
and
at all of that.
That's why compared to
the Bills.
That's why I am curious to see what they look like post Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
That's why I was so interested in them when before obviously the playoffs when Kelce was not playing well and it looked like oh Father Time has come home kind of deal.
I did three fantasy drafts in 24 hours.
Yeah,
and I saw one of my friends draft him. Very
like the second round,
yeah, and I was like, oof.
But like, yeah, so like you're still thinking about it because, like, I mean, turn on the playoffs, but like the regular season was a slog.
I mean,
not good.
I had him last year, and it was bad. Watching
and so,
that.
Like, that's my thing is I'm fascinated in them. Where I think for the Bills, for me, this season is both stay competitive, but also I want to see what these young guys look like. I want to see, hey, do you really have something here in Khalil Shakir, Dalton Kincaid, you know, eventually Cole Bishop, Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard, Dorian Williams, Osiris Torrance. Like, is this like your next crop? Because ultimately, they're setting themselves up to have more cap space next year. They did a move just to free up cap space this year so they can make moves at all. They've got a lot more draft picks. They're going to have two twos next year, two fours, one and a three as well. So those are roster players on almost any team with those draft picks. They're setting themselves up for the next core. I do not subscribe to the feeling of they're wasting Josh Allen. We've seen since Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen went to the league, you know, one year after the other, three quarterbacks and one Super Bowls. Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and one year with Matthew Stafford. I mean, that's all that's won. Joe Burrow has made one.
At this point, good for Matthew Stafford.
No, it's honestly
good for him.
That Super Bowl, I remember that was the one positive I could take from it.
To squeak out a Super Bowl in this crazy window that we're seeing for Mahomes and other great quarterbacks, good for Matthew Stafford. I'm happy.
I remember feeling good about that one, like even after 21 or after 13 seconds of like, man, like Stafford has like, I mean, he was him and Calvin Johnson were the only thing relevant for the Detroit Lions for years.
He was battered and injured and then first year
with LA.
Yeah. Right.
They go on a great playoff run, and he gets it. Aaron Donald got his as well, and you're like...
Even Von Miller got his moment. I mean, sure, Von Miller already had his moment, but...
But it was... I actually did really like seeing the Rams win one. Sean McVay as well. For being an LA team, I was like, I like that. I'm with it. But so, like, that's all the teams that have won. Like, the Eagles have made it to a Super Bowl, yes. San Francisco's made it to two in this era, yes.
Yeah.
But, like... Baltimore's had the two seed or has had the one seed twice with Lamar's two Super Bowls. They have a single playoff win in those 2 years. You know, he's never made two Super Bowls. Burrow has made it to one, but I think there are honest questions about his ability to stay healthy. I think there's also honest questions about the ownership's willingness to keep a competitive team on the field. We'll see if Jamar Chase plays.
I hope he does.
I mean, like that's
because I'm looking at this. I'm sorry, fantasy's on the brain because it was a lot. Drafted him 7th overall the other day, and then I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Like, they have the Patriots week one.
He's holding out, kind of.
But if he misses games, he's fully holding out. I mean, he's there, sure. But
no, on the Joe Burrow point, though, I don't think it's necessarily injuries, like if he's injury prone. I think it's more so, can he come back from this wrist thing?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's hampering his throwing motion that much.
See, for me, though, it's just he has missed time in like almost every season, except I think one. His rookie year gets cut short. Second year is where you see the pop-off. They go to the Super Bowl. And I think he's missed time in the last 2 years. And so, like, that's where I get nervous with him. Lawrence has never really developed into the guy. I mean, he's good. Jacksonville's kind of a tire fire.
His first year, he started 10 games, played in 10 games. And
then gets hurt. Yep.
Gets hurt. Second year, plays all 16, starts all 16.
Go to the Super Bowl.
2022, starts all 16, plays all 16.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, and then last year played 10, missed 10. Okay. Or played 10, missed 7.
Yep. But on Houston Texans, I've heard a lot of people say this, too, of just, like, are we kind of putting the cart before the horse with them? Mm-hmm. Are they really that talented? Their offensive line was shaky at best last year at times. You know, C.J. Stroud, I've seen this stat all over where it's like he had like, you know, the quote-unquote stat of the most interceptable passes or turnover passes, what have you. He was up there with Mahomes and Allen. The problem was Mahomes and Allen had 15 and 18. Stroud had 5 or whatever it was. And it's like, you know, that number's likely going to go up. They didn't have a very difficult schedule last year, and they still only went like 10-7. You know, their defense is kind of stayed the same. They rotated out one great pass rusher for another, so it's not like they added that. Stephon Diggs, I think a lot of us are, you know, Bills fans here are going like, he's probably their wide receiver 3. It's kind of everything I've heard as well. I think their offense will be good, but now that they've got the number one schedule in their division and all that, like, are they going to be awesome? Maybe. But also maybe not. They've got a tough road ahead. And so I think that's my thing is like as the season has gotten closer, I'm nervous for the Bills because of all the unknowns. I mean, I've heard Sal Capaccio talk about it too, of like even watching practice, you're kind of like, I don't know. I mean, like, we'll see what happens this year. Like it's a lot of new guys.
But there's a lot of question marks around just the AFC.
Oh, in general.
As a whole.
Even
the AFC East. There's still lots of question marks. Yes, Tua got his big contract, but
I think we all kind of know about what the Dolphins are.
Right, and that is a big offensive play every once in a while, and if their defense can stay healthy, then they're good, but if not, then what are you going to do
there? They're a team that just, you know, they're probably going to start out hot. I like that, though, that the Bills are getting them week 2 at night. I kind of like that. Again, the Dolphins do not handle the Bills well at all. They've never been able to figure out Josh Allen.
They played them early last year, and they took care of them, no problem.
Yep, and that was after the 70-point game they had against Denver.
That was... Yeah.
And so you get that early. The Patriots, I think, are not tanking, but like they're in full rebuild.
You can tell what the Patriots are.
They're in full rebuild.
There's no question marks around the Patriots because you know that they're rebuilding.
And the Jets, I think, are a massive question mark. Hassan Reddick is still fully holding out. He is the last player left because Trent Williams appears to have gotten his deal with San Francisco today. And so, you know, there's that whole thing, and they feel like a house of cards that if it starts out poorly, that could be a disaster. And they get San Francisco in California for week 1. I think that's Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. And so, I mean, that's right away you get one of the better teams in the NFL.
It is Monday Night Football.
Yeah. But you right away get one of the better teams in the NFL. And again, like, I mean, if they start out 0-1 and it's just not a good showing, like San Francisco beats you up, like they can. They are up and down. And again, for the Bills, it seems like the vibes are really good in that locker room. I've heard people bring up, you know, now Diggs is out, potentially, you know, does that free up Allen to, like, I don't have to make anyone happy. I can just find the open guy. Like, you know, all of these guys are going to be solid. That's something that I've talked about in terms of, you know, building an NFL offense. I think that's the way to go. I just wish they didn't have to go to guys like Mac Hollins and Curtis Samuel. I wish that they had drafted their young guys to go along with Khalil Shakir and Dalton Kincaid, Keon Coleman, and have, like, another young guy in there that's like, ooh, he's been building through our system, sort of like a Romeo Doubs, who's a fourth-round pick. Dontayvion Wicks is a fifth-round pick. Jaden Reed, a third-round pick. You know, it's not like they went in the first round for these guys, but they drafted them, and they drafted them with very specific skill sets. So it's going to be a fascinating year. It's a year, though, where I think maybe my biggest prediction, and, you know, where we're starting this, and we got to take a quick time out here in just a second, but I think my big question or my big prediction here is I think Khalil Shakir is going to emerge as their number one weapon, as an elite slot receiver that Josh Allen going more to the short game is going to take advantage of. I've mentioned it. I think they're going to go to the short game more, which could lead to more passes. I see him. I mean, and this is going to be a huge jump up. He had 39 catches last year, 45 targets. I could see him being a 90 catch guy and over 1,000 yards and into like the 7 to 10 touchdown range. That's like, I've become so bullish on him. And in really the one game we got to see him with Josh Allen in the preseason, he had 3 catches, 3 targets. And it was just boom, boom, boom. You knew what he was going to do. He has that a little bit more of an explosive speed that Cole Beasley didn't. He's a little bit taller than Cole Beasley. And you saw what Allen was able to do with Beasley. And now he's later in his career. He's more mature into his career. And you add a more physically, athletically imposing receiver. I get it. A lot of the stats don't necessarily point to that's what he's going to be. I just, with all the unknowns, and Josh, you brought up 150 catches, 240 targets out the door, someone's going to have to take up a lion's share. I actually think it's going to be Shakir over Kincaid, but just barely. I still think Kincaid's going to have a great year, but I look at Shakir as just, I think he's something special for these guys. And I've felt that way since the draft. I mean, Derek's brought it up that I've kind of been the president of the Shakir Hive. Since he came out of Boise State, I saw him as maybe more of a diet Deebo Samuel, like they could use him on the outside more. But I think that's going to be a big part of it as well. He's a versatile guy that I'm excited to see a full season of. Like, he had a good preseason, he had a good camp. They have a need, and he showed out at the end of last year. And now it feels like it's all coming up, you know, the stream where it's going to be Shakir, and I think it's going to start week one. I'm so, so excited. 803-0550 is the number to call. What are your predictions as we are under a week away from the start of the Bills season as they will host the Arizona Cardinals Monday on Sunday, again at Highmark Stadium? Very, very excited. We'll get Josh's predictions here on the other side. We'll also get yours as well after a quick timeout. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is Doug.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
WGR.
I already told Poe, bro. You might as well get away from me, bro.
Yeah.
And all love. Like, I would be so happy to compete against Poe, because that's my bro. And I would want Poe to punch me in my chin, because I respect him that much. But I want Poe to understand that we coming for that chin too, respectfully. It's all passion and all love. I done seen you multiple times come down in that box, taking dude, boom. You come on my side, Poe, I'm gonna knock your head off, bro. And that's just snow.
It was Bills left tackle Deion Dawkins. I
love him
that yet.
So much.
He's
national treasure, Deion Dawkins.
I say this almost every time we play a clip of his, but he's one of my favorite Bills players to like listen to, to just hear stuff back. He's talking there about Jordan Poyer, who's now in the Miami Dolphins. I'm a big fan too of like talking trash, but then be like, but respectfully.
Respectfully. That's the key word.
It's my favorite.
It's so, and honestly, it's going to be really interesting to see how that kind of reunion is going to be.
I think it'll be fine.
I think, well, no, but I don't think it's going to be bad. But just because I think it's interesting that the Bills are going to be in Miami first.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas if it was Poyer comes here first, I think it'd be a little different.
Oh, if it was like,
if the Bills hosted the Dolphins
in
first,
Buffalo.
Yeah, instead of...
Does he get a cheer from the crowd, or does he get booed?
I wonder.
I think it's tough because he is on the Dolphins.
And I think it's also tough because...
It's going to be a mix. It would be a mix, I think.
I mean, you remember earlier in the offseason, the clip of him being like, oh, I'm home, or something like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Yeah, that did happen. Okay, yeah.
That's...
I think it's a mix, though. Him and Hyde have been some of the two stalwarts of this era. They've been two of the more beloved players. Mm-hmm. I would probably say Micah Hyde more, I would say.
I think so,
especially
too.
With the charity and softball game and stuff like that. And he's been adamant this offseason, too, of like, if it's literally anybody I come play for, it is Buffalo, or I'm done, or I'm retired.
I think what's also, I mean, in their times here, I think you're still right, but it's closer. But now, given the way that both of them departed, I think it's... way more
it's Hyde
than Poyer, just because of Poyer went to a division rival, mm-hmm. and then he's had all these videos in the offseason talking about how excited he is to be there, and it's like, eh.
Man, all the reunions. Well, the Gabe Davis, Mitch Morse one's going to be at home.
Mm-hmm.
That's Monday night in Buffalo against Jacksonville week 3. So that's good. All right, that one's at home. But, you know, Stephon Diggs in Houston.
Yeah,
first,
some of these
for Poyer in Miami.
Some of these reunions aren't going to happen for a couple of years, if at all.
Which ones?
In terms of coming to Buffalo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, Diggs won't be here this year unless there's a playoff game in Buffalo against Houston.
Yeah.
Which there very well could be.
And we'll see how much longer his career is going to last.
Right. And he might not even be in Houston if he comes here next year.
Well, this is maybe bad of me. I keep thinking after this year he's just going to be a Dallas Cowboy.
Mm. That's what I was thinking, too. He's just going to go play with his brother and then finish
his career. Yeah.
Trey White won't be here this year.
Nope, he's on the Rams. That's right.
Bills are at the Rams
mm-hmm.
in week 14.
Week 14. I forgot about the Rams, yeah.
Yeah. Who else is there? I think that's it, pretty much.
Well, yeah, because Morris and Davis are both on Jacksonville.
They're on Jacksonville, and that is week three.
Three, yep.
That's the Monday night game.
Yeah.
Interesting. Who else is there? I feel like we're forgetting somebody. There was a lot of names. So
there was, but I mean, those are the big ones.
Yeah.
Those are the big ones.
Yeah.
There are a few, of course, that have departed, but those are really the big ones. And yeah, you kind of get all the reunions. But
Leonard
Floyd,
San Francisco.
does not count.
Come on. I don't know. He had a really good year last year.
Did he? He's barely here. He was
For the first half of the season, he was here.
Sure.
Not the second half, but what are you going to do? Still a reunion of sorts.
So we were talking in the break. We're doing predictions today. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here in the
Say what you want about
next
me.
Point show. Yeah, you won't do predictions.
I
for
won't
the Bills.
Do Bills predictions. You
such,
have known this.
Such a cowardly
You've known
move.
This ever since you met me. I don't predict any of my team's scores. The last time I predicted...
I'm not asking you to predict a score.
Yeah, but I'm still predicting...
But what do you feel most confident in the Bills this year? Mine's Shakir. I've been on that since
May. Different. That's different. Talking about players and being confident in players is different than predicting what they will do.
Well, who are you confident in this
I'm
year?
I'm confident in Shakir. I'm obviously confident in Allen.
Yep.
I'm really confident in Rasul Douglas.
Oh, because you read the Tyler Dunn article this morning, right?
Yeah, he had basically, I'm paraphrasing this quote, summarizing it here for you. But so Tyler Dunn put out this article. And a big focus of it is Rasul Douglas. And again, paraphrasing here, Douglas said that if he was healthy, the Bills would have won their game against the Chiefs last year in the playoffs.
And he was mad about it.
He was basically saying, I'm the reason we lost.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, he's pretty upset about it.
I didn't even think that you were a problem in that game. Like, you did great, and you just got
you
hurt.
You were on the field, man.
Yeah,
like, everyone
you
else,
were there. You
everyone
were,
else was hurt.
You could at least play. And I think... just that mindset coming from him in year two, year one and a half, if you want to call it that, because he wasn't even on the Bills for a whole season last year.
Year one and a half, yeah.
So if you're looking at it like that, I think Douglas, I mean, that mindset for Rasul Douglas to have is incredible.
I do like the secondary. And now they're starting to get healthier. Bishop's practicing. I think Mike Edwards is like fully practicing.
Yeah, Mike Edwards sounds
pretty. He started that last week, right, where he was like, I'm going to play. I'm fine.
Well, 2 weeks ago, he was like, yeah, if they need me for week one, I'll be good. And then last week it was, yep, I'm good.
Yep, he's not even in a non-contact jersey or anything like that.
We're finally going to get some injury reports this week.
Tomorrow.
I have missed the Bills PR injury report graphics so much.
Have you?
I have.
I always get very stressed out about it.
But I like just seeing what's going on.
Oh, it gives you something to talk about.
Yeah. Well, no, the information that you get from that is like, all right, fine, there, we have...
Oh, there's no longer doing a guessing game where are they actually at and stuff like that.
But,
that's fair.
But, yeah, going back to the whole confidence thing, with Rasul Douglas, I just think being the veteran that he is, coming into, again, like year one and a half, if you want to call it that, with a younger secondary around him.
He's kind of got to be the elder statesman.
Yeah, kind of the leader. And Jeremy and Joe were talking about captains earlier this morning. I think he could be one of the captains.
So, yeah, I was going to say, the Bills have not released their captains yet,
no,
have they?
No, and, I mean... I think we should probably see them sometime
relatively
this week.
Soonish,
right?
Relatively soon.
I think he should be on the list, just because one of that quote that I paraphrased there of if I was playing, we would have won the game against the Chiefs. Him saying that
if
I was healthy, right? Because he was playing, but he just wasn't 100%.
Yep,
and he still had a great game, but I think that mentality and mindset should be what you want out of a captain, especially now that you're missing a lot of your leaders that have been here for years.
Yeah.
So, and you lost two big leaders in the secondary. If you can gain one back right there, that's a big win.
You lost three leaders. Because Trey, with all the injuries, he's been in that room. I mean, he's been around the building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's...
But that's three cap... They were all three captains, right?
Were they? I think so.
I mean, I know Hyde was.
I think Poyer was as well. That's three captains.
We're not sure about Trey.
No, Trey definitely was.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's three captains. Wow. Or at least in some years, that is at least three captains.
Right. Maybe not every year, but most years.
By the way, Tyler Dunn, you can find his pieces over at GoAlongTD.com. Big friend of the station and does wonderful work over there. I am going to have to check out the Rasul Douglas piece now because I always think about the linebackers in that game. I haven't necessarily rewatched it, but I always think about the lack of linebackers and how much that hurt them. But for Rasul Douglas to be like, nah, if I was healthy, we're talking about a way different outcome. It's like, all right, man, all right. And that's the thing, too, is for this year at least. So you're kind of throwing your hat in there for Rasul Douglas.
Yeah.
He's going to have a big year.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, like I said, that secondary needs a leader. And Kyer Elam and
Christian Benford
can obviously have big years as well. But for those guys, well, if more for Elam, it'd be more of a breakout season than a big year.
Mm-hmm.
But for Douglas, I think it's just more of a higher chance.
I'd love if they could get something out of Elam, though.
Yeah, I think they will.
Especially what last year was. If they can get anything out of him, I'd be thrilled.
I think they will. I just don't think it's going to be what we ever expected.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to get something out of him, but it's not going to be – it might not be first round – caliber season.
Yep. We do have some hockey news as well I want to pass along here. The Oilers have signed forward Leon Draisaitl to an 8-year contract extension that begins in 2025-26, and the average annual value is $14 million. Arguably one of, if not, top five players in the league.
Wait a second. Is he getting paid more than McDavid? Extension.
Is he?
Oh, I can't look at Cap Friendly.
Sorry. Forgot that's gone.
Thanks, Washington. Gotta love it. All right.
Puckpedia.
What do you got for me? I haven't really used this site all that much because I miss Cap Friendly so much. Let's see. That's crazy. $14 million.
Connor McDavid's annual value is 12.5. So, yes, he is being now paid more than Connor McDavid.
Wow. I mean, to be fair...
It's not like, Draisaitl's like,
right.
Really, we're going to... No.
He
is also going to be one of the best players of his generation.
Yeah, but it's also, McDavid got that contract how many years ago?
It's been a while.
and he comes up in 2 years now, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Really? Wow. Okay, so he's going to make like $17 million a year.
Oh, yeah. He's got this season and next season on 12 and a half.
Yeah, he's going to have a nice payday after that.
It's going to be interesting to see how they work that out. Maybe maybe they won't have money to pay him.
We also are going to have some, like, but on the hockey stuff, you know, Sabres start here pretty soon. Yeah. I mean, in like a week or so, we're going to have the
rookies kind of start to show
but
up.
But the tournament as well. The
Prospects Challenge.
Prospect Challenge, thank you. That's coming up next week or the week after.
Yeah, and it's. Let me try
is it
to
next
get it
week?
Here.
I think it's next
week.
Yeah,
but I think it's the Sabres, the Bruins, the Devils.
I think the Penguins as well.
Penguins.
It's
Senators too, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Which is new this year. They weren't here last year.
That's coming up next week. And then, I mean, quote unquote, preseason and training camp starts. But, I mean, that's a blink of an eye. And you're all of a sudden at your first game.
Yeah, it's not at all like the whole NFL.
Oh, my goodness. Which takes forever.
So, Sabres Prospect Challenge. Sabres, Bruins, Blue Jackets, Devils, Senators, Penguins. So, six teams. That starts September 13th. 10 days.
Wow. There you go.
That kind of snuck up on us here.
Just a little bit. 803-0550 is the number to call. Looking for your predictions on this NFL season with games starting on Thursday. And we also have a game on Friday. And we got ESPN here as well here in the studio. And it's always like a little subtle reminder that the Green Bay Packers and the Philadelphia Eagles will be playing in Sao Paulo, Brazil
on
Friday.
Two teams that wear primarily green are playing in a stadium where it's banned to wear the color green.
I think it's like one of those like you shouldn't do it.
Bad luck. That's what I heard.
It's bad luck, but every team that ever plays there, even the ones in the World Cup.
It's awesome.
Nigeria made a jersey change. Like last second when they played there in 2014 to not wear green because one of Nigeria's primary colors in their flag is green.
Oh, it was green, yeah.
And they wore, I think, all white jerseys with a altered white and black logo and then I think black shorts and some other color socks. I'm not sure. But they didn't wear any green. And yes, the Eagles and the Packers apparently reportedly will not be primarily colored green.
Ah, it is because of a rival. The color is banned because of its rival with Brazilian soccer club Palmeiras, but for special events like the Eagles-Packers game, the color is allowed.
Stop. That's soft.
Hear the Eagles go to a... They're
wearing their black alternates.
Here. Yeah. I thought it was white with black helmets.
No, it's the black pants. So they're taking as much of the green off as they can.
Yeah, because the numbers are still green.
Yeah, they're taking as much of the green off as possible.
Coward move. Make them wear not green. If you're gonna,
they've got the blue and yellow like from like the 20s.
Yes, wear the blue and yellow throwbacks. And I don't know what you do for the Packers because
they've got a throwback from
Packers,
the 20s.
No, the Packers have always wore green.
Oh, I also think they have a blue and yellow.
No, they don't.
I gotta look this up. We gotta hit a quick timeout. 803-0550 is the number to call. We'll look for your calls after a quick timeout. Zach Jones and Josh Mint here in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is W.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
UGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And coming up later this week, join WGR Sal Capaccio as he does the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show live from Northtown Kia, 3900 Sheridan Drive in Amherst, Thursday, September 5th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Stop by, say hi, grab a Paula's Donut while supplies last. Score some awesome WGR 550 swag and enter to win Buffalo Bills merchandise courtesy of Northtown. No purchase necessary, Northtown Automotive, the official automotive dealer of the Buffalo Bills. See you September 5th at Northtown Kia. And let's go to the phones here as we've got Steve on the line. Steve, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Doing good. Forecast is going to be a division sweep this year, and I think that's good enough to at least lock down the 3 seed.
I feel like that might do better, though, Steve. I mean, it's 6 games. you got to imagine that. I'm assuming you think they can probably beat a Jacksonville, an Arizona, Houston, right? Are we thinking that?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess with this team, what I believe is that there's always going to be one or two Billsy losses.
That's fair.
Regardless of, you know, how great we think they are. It just seems like they're, you know, their totality that we've seen with Allen, they tend to drop one or two games against somebody they shouldn't, which is why they won't be the one or the two seed.
What do you think in the Billsy losses are going to be this year? Because I always like looking at the schedule
and finding
and
it
and trying to find it, because I mean, I'm looking at Tennessee right now and I'm not feeling great about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm high on Tennessee for actually winning that division.
Yes, there we go.
Just because I think Houston's solid as well. But, you know,
yeah, but
I wouldn't
Houston,
be surprised
I feel
if
like,
they drop one.
Houston, I feel like, wouldn't be too much of a Billsy loss. I feel like they're a good team, or at least an up-and-coming team, right? I mean...
Well, I mean, but I would say maybe it's like, it's not that they're losing to a bad team, but they lose in a Billsy way, or maybe, you know what I mean? It's like, hey, we got that, and it's like, oh.
The game went to overtime, and we lost.
Right, and it's like, oh, great, another 0-7 in overtime appearances for Josh Allen. He just can't get it done when the pressure's on.
That is right. Steve, thanks for the call, man. Oh, man. That is a stat that every time they go to overtime. That's been a thing, too. There are a few overtime games that – and this is why I have a tough time, too, even with, like, the Chiefs' 13 seconds game. The longer we get away from it, the less I feel good about, like, anything positive happening there. The Bills obviously don't get the ball, and then the rule changes. But even in the regular season, you know, there's a little bit this follows with the Bills as well. There have been times when Allen gets the ball in overtime, and they just don't score. It's all of a sudden a 3-and-out or what have you, and it doesn't go well.
The Jets game.
Jets game, the Tampa Bay game back in 21.
Yep.
And so like that has like been something that like gnaws the back of my mind. Like so like Steve's kind of making a point of like I still can't get it done in the big moments, which like is untrue, but in overtime I'm like, there are moments he has not been able to get it done.
You know what? You wanted a prediction out of me. My closest prediction to a record prediction will be that the Bills Josh Allen will break his overtime streak this year.
He wins an overtime game.
At some point. I will not say when. I will not say against who. That's my only prediction that I will come close to. That's the closest you'll get to me saying wins and losses.
By the way, in terms of the Billsy loss, I'm just going to say now it's going to be Jacksonville. They have never in their history played a good game against the Jacksonville Jaguars. And it will never happen until the day I die.
9-3, 9-6, what was it?
Oh,
it was 10-3. You're talking the playoff game?
No, the Urban Meyer game.
I think 9-3.
I think it was 9-3.
It was still
not
good.
Or 9-6. It was something like that.
Oh, man. Just, again, they've never played a good game against the Jacksonville Jaguars in their life.
Allen threw for 264 yards.
Oh my goodness, that's so
and they
bad.
Lost 9-6.
You've also had, I think, Jim Kelly's final game is against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Oh wow,
not good.
You're going way back.
Yeah, they've never played the Jacksonville Jaguars good. It never happened. It's never happened. That's the game.
Jim Kelly's last game was the only time the Bills have ever lost a home playoff game under Marv Levy
against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Barely an NFL franchise. They've never played a good game against them.
I'm not disagreeing with
you. I'm telling you right now. I'm just
looking at you.
Whatever the over-under is for that Monday night game, you know, obviously we'll find out as 2 weeks get played. Under. Hammer the under. That's what's going to happen. 19-16. That's my bet.
Wait. What was the score last year? The score last year was 25-20.
Still not great.
It's not bad, though. I mean, the over-under in that game was, what, probably like 35?
Goodness, even in that game. I mean, you're in London. Right. We're all talking about, did they leave too late? Should they have left earlier? Should they have
injuries.
Even left later to, like, you know, not
two
have
two major
to deal
injuries
with
back to back.
I mean, at the start of the game.
Yeah. But no, I mean, look at that game. That game.
And then the first time
still,
as a
points.
Jaguar, Calvin Ridley played well. The first time and only time. They've never played the Jaguars good. 803-0550 is the number to call. Want to share your predictions? Thank you for the call, Steve. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt. Here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Zach and Josh. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Happy game week, everyone. His Bills will open up their 2024 regular season on Sunday at home against the Arizona Cardinals. It is a Tuesday, though, after a nice Labor Day weekend. And I want to remind you that head over to WGR550.com and enter for your chance to win a Blackstone 2-burner black outdoor LP grass griddle just in time for tailgate season, courtesy of Value Home Centers. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're talking a little bit of predictions today. Also having a little bit of fun at the Bills' expense as I was looking through the schedule, Josh, trying to find where I think their Billsy loss is coming. I am not with our last caller, Steve, on thinking they're going to be a good team. I trust almost nothing about them. I don't like Will Levis. A lot of their free agent moves seem to be in a desperation to make the team as good as humanly possible around Will Levis, and I don't even think it has exceeded all that much. Tajay Spears is a pretty cool running back, though. I like him. But that's the one. At home, October 20th, I could see the Bills losing that game. Just in like a, really them of everybody? But I think this is going to be a little bit of a caveat. They have to be a good team, right? Like, they have to be a team that, you know, so here, for argument's sake, we get to that Tennessee game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they would have had to have beaten Arizona, Miami, Jacksonville, Baltimore, Houston, and the Jets, and then lose to Tennessee and go, that's the game you lost?
Yeah.
That's the one? Because before that, it kind of just feels like it's like, oh, they're having a tough year. A lot of people are projecting them to have a tougher year.
You can even look back to last year, and it's a little tougher because they had a lot of struggles stringing wins together until after the bye week. And last year, if you want to look at Billsy losses.
Like seven of them.
Well.
I'm so serious.
Right. Even though they only lost six games. But
every one of them.
But the one that sticks out to me the most is the Denver game.
Yeah.
Even above the New England one.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, New England had its moments, but the Denver one was just like, yep, there it is. That's the game. That's the one.
For me, it was opening night against Zach Wilson.
I could see that, but it's different when it's an opening night game compared to...
Because it's week one. There is always this feeling of don't take week one too seriously. Yeah, there's a lot left of the season, right?
Right. I also... So, as Zach said before, we have ESPN on in here, and they were just showing the preview for Jets and 49ers for next Monday night. A week from... 6 days away. Mm-hmm. A week from yesterday. And they showed highlights, and... The only things you see are 49ers highlights and Aaron Rodgers running out with a flag.
That's it. That's all.
Because you really can't put Jets highlights in there because Aaron Rodgers isn't in any of them.
You can
and the guy that's in all of them
is
Zach Wilson. So you can, it's just so funny.
It was so weird last year. But that was, I think, the game though that was the most signs of like, okay, yeah, this season is going to be a little bit tougher of a road for the Bills.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of hype going into it, of course. It's on 9/11 as well. I mean, we joke now, but I mean, Aaron Rodgers coming out of the tunnel, holding the American flag and running out with it. I mean, there was a lot of juice for that game. There was. Yeah.
If he had played that whole game and it would have turned out that way,
you're still frustrated by the Allen picks and how...
I want to say it's even more frustrating because then you have to face them again later in the season, and how would that go?
Well, you got to face them again, but you could look and go, man, if Allen's just smart with the ball, they're fine. I think it was more the fact of like, yes, it's the same. Like, just hold on to the ball, or like, don't turn the ball over, you're fine. It's more the fact of like, you can swallow a loss to Aaron Rodgers much easier than a Zach Wilson one.
I think you're right. I don't know why I was thinking that it would have been maybe more frustrating. I just think Aaron Rodgers, the personality, is frustrating.
Oh, no, of course.
That's my problem with it is he himself is just...
frustrating.
Yeah. And I want the era to be done. Because when he was in Green Bay, for the most part, in terms of here in Buffalo and in the market and everything, he really wasn't unlikable.
He didn't care.
He wasn't under a microscope from us specifically. I'm sure if you're
a Green Bay fan, you're like, this is exhausting.
Yeah, or even like, you know, a Bears fan or something like that. It's like, oh, I'm so sick of this guy. And that's kind of how we feel now. But I remember back to when he was in Green Bay, I kind of liked him. I thought he was kind of fun. And
oh, for all of his early parts of his career, he was easily my favorite quarterback
in football. Because he had this big throw. He had this presence around him, kind of. And he just seemed like that dude.
Mm-hmm.
In an era of Tom Brady's the best, of, oh, look, there's somebody else on the other side of the league that is also good and more tolerable, but now you're seeing that maybe he wasn't.
His career, though, is always going to be fun to look back at. Interesting. Not the personality. I mean, Aaron Rodgers' career. Because for as good as he was, and in somewhat of an NFC that was ripe for the taking, he makes it to one Super Bowl, wins it. And so you'll never be able to take that away from him. He has excelled past, you know, guys like Dan Marino. He has the Super Bowl. But for much of his career, it was Aaron Rodgers is significantly the best quarterback in the NFC. Then Russell Wilson kind of arrived, and you're like, all right, he's maybe the best deep ball passer. Very similar to Rodgers in kind of how they play. Maybe a better deep ball passer, but Rodgers still maybe the better overall player. I think Breeze were already all kind of starting to look at his career a little bit more, you know. Okay, he was awesome, but is he an all-time great? Maybe not. I mean, there are too many years in there where, yes, he threw for 5,000 yards. His team went 7-9, 6-10. You know, there was a stretch there. Yes, his defenses were bad, but let's be honest, they weren't that bad where it's just – it felt sort of empty, especially, you know, he didn't really push the ball down the field. And so it's just – you're going to look back at, you know, Matt Ryan and Cam Newton each have like one great year, and they propel their teams to the Super Bowl, and Aaron Rodgers in a few NFC Championship games, rough – by both him, Mike McCarthy would have you, but I think his career, especially if like this is like the last year, or if he really never does anything with the Jets and it kind of just like simmers out, I think his career is going to be kind of fun to look back to. Because like, even guys like Peyton Manning, like, yeah, he gets the second Super Bowl. No one cares that like he was essentially a passenger. Like, no one really cares. He made it to three. No, he made it to four. He made it with two with Denver. So he made it to four, you know, won two of them. You feel good. Brady obviously is essentially untouchable in terms of like how many Super Bowls he's gone to. Mahomes has already passed a lot of guys because of his playoff stats and all that. But Rodgers is like one of like the few, like, I've won a Super Bowl, and yet his career is still somewhat criticized because of how good he was and then how bad a lot of the playoff moments were. Let's go back to the phones here. We've got Mark in Tonawanda. Mark, how are we doing today?
Hey, good man. Thanks for having me on. I was actually at that Jet game last year, and
so
it was
sorry.
Just, even if you don't like Rodgers, him holding the flag, man, it pumped you right up.
It was an electrifying moment, 100%.
Oh, my God. It was unbelievable. But, my point here is the whole Diggs thing still blows my mind, and what I mean by that is, like, we still could have drafted Coleman this year. You'd go into the season with, because you're kind of binded by Diggs' contract, production, I mean, whatever, you're still not eating $31 million of dead cap this year. You have a really good receiver still in Steph Diggs, and now you got a guy like Coleman. It'd be the best receiver, you know, duo that Josh Allen's had. So I'm going into this week. Granted, it's Tuesday. I want to be a little critical because Sunday morning at 7 a.m. the grass lot. I want to be pumped up.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just trying to think about this. I got to get pumped up. I want you guys to help me out here, okay? I'm just down. I wish the receiver core was better around Josh Allen right now.
Yeah, no, Mark, I totally get it, man. Thanks for the call. I will tell you, I think the optics would have been better if Diggs is on the team. I do think the Bills are doing what's better for them in the long term. It's just, it's painful because unlike on Madden or NCAA 25, we can't just sim the season. You know, the season's not over in 25 minutes. Depends on how fast you can click the button. It's, you know, a long time. We're going to go through seasons. We're going to go through a winter, and it's painful. But I think the Bills have set themselves up now to eat the $31 million in dead cap now. You know, we in the first hour, we also talked about like all the draft capital they've accumulated, the cap space they've accumulated with getting rid of not just Diggs, but a lot of the, you know, the older grizzled veterans. They're moving on to a different era. The problem is with that, though, it is completely unknown. We don't know if Shakir, Kincaid, Curtis Samuel, Keon Coleman are going to be good enough for Josh Allen. I have brought up the point, it worked for Kansas City, and they were actively harmful to the offense. I simply do not believe that will be the case for the Buffalo Bills. I also think the Bills have set themselves up more to be successful in the sense of it's not just going to be a one- or two-man show. It's going to be a group effort with the superstar quarterback. If you can have it where you have two superstar wide receivers, that is absolutely the way to go. That is just not realistic in a long-term basis. You're going to have to pay one, if not both of them, and you simply can't, or you're going to lose a lot of other guys on your roster. So I think the next best thing is to not just have one superstar wide receiver and what we saw last year, which was to really bad. Gabe Davis, I think, is an wide receiver. Very good at blocking. He's a physical guy, what have you. But in terms of being a wide receiver two, which was his role for 2 years, not very good. And then we talked about Hardy and Trent Sherfield earlier today. Neither of them eclipsed 30 targets. Neither of them even eclipsed past 15 receptions last year. And this is a team that was desperate for help at wide receiver, desperate by the middle of the year.
How much of that, though, in with Hardy and Sherfield specifically, just because, like you said, they needed catches.
Yep.
But they weren't being targeted that much. Was it a lack of
open?
Was it a lack of trust, or was it a lack of being open?
I think it was trust and you weren't open.
Okay.
I think there's a big reason.
I wonder sometimes, maybe was the scheme not for them and it just didn't work out in that sense? Or was it a they're not good enough to get open and there's no trust there, or not as much trust there between Allen and those two receivers?
Well, I think it's the thing, but the trust would have developed, you know, in the offseason, in training camp, in the preseason.
But that's the
and
that's
if all of a sudden
point,
he's sitting there going, these guys aren't getting open. Like they're not making big plays for me, what have you. You're already seeing it in camp too. Like Keon Coleman's not getting open that much. Like his separation is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And yet Allen is still throwing him the ball because he's making big catches.
Right.
Sure, it's practice, but he's coming down with the ball.
And he's shown the ability that he can make those big catches. Granted, they're out the college level, but he's shown that ability. And again, I go back to the Mitch Trubisky pass in the Pittsburgh, I think it was the Pittsburgh game. Was it the Pittsburgh game?
It would have had to have been.
Yeah,
Either that or the first game.
No, it was the Pittsburgh game, I think, then, because it was the one where Coleman was asked about it. He's like, yeah, I should have had that. It should have been a catch. And it was clearly one of those things where, yeah, Coleman was in the right spot and a little out of position, but the pass was just too far above his head, and Allen would not have made that mistake. And it's nothing against, you know, Coleman or Trubisky or anybody, but I think that when you look at his performances in the preseason, you can't fully take everything in, positive or negative, because of the fact that he was playing with Mitch Trubisky most of the time, and when he did get the couple Allen targets, It was the one, yeah. And you're being covered by Jalen Johnson at that point.
Yeah.
So, and not to say that, you know, that's to give Coleman any excuse or whatever, because you're going to face number one cornerbacks. But in your first preseason game as a rookie, your first target really is you going up against one of the better cornerbacks in the league. Because, I mean, Jalen Johnson's pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that when you're looking at it like this, it's hard to tell if the positives and negatives are really coming to fruition.
But that's why you take the preseason pledge, right? I mean, it's a joke, but it's also you're going to get the most basic you-know-what ever. Like, that's what it's here for. They're barely games. Teams really don't like to do them. It's to get butts in seats and to pay a little bit more money for some games that aren't really even games. Most coaches do prefer
they're the glorified scrimmage practice.
Yeah, but most teams and coaches prefer the closed practices or the joint practices with coaches and teams that they trust. They prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're really – I think the only thing you may have seen that was legitimate compared to the regular season is somewhat of the kickoff. And that's it. That's the only thing. And so that's where, I'm just happy Keon Coleman was on the field. I'm glad he basically didn't see the field at all in the third preseason game, because that kind of signals that, hey, he is going to be starting and they're going to use him. I think they're going to be forced to. I don't really think the Bills love playing young guys or rookies. I think they're going to be more forced to, though. But, yeah, you just can't take anything. I mean, I'm even trying to get a little bit excited about the fact that, you know, Khalil Shakir was targeted four times and had four catches, but, you can't. They're running very basic stuff. There's not much you can grab onto it. The little you can, you're like, sure. Greg Rousseau may have developed a power rush. I don't know. But he made Broderick Jones look like a complete bust. And the next week, Broderick Jones looked okay. You know, he wasn't a turnstile. But against the Bills, he let up 2.5 sacks in like a quarter to one guy. I mean, so that's always the tough part, and I try to take a lot of it from just what I keep seeing in camp, what I hear reporters are saying, which is Dalton Kincaid and Khalil Shakir keep getting open. They're incredibly consistent for Allen, and he keeps targeting them. Keon Coleman keeps making big plays. He's not necessarily getting wide open, but he's making big plays. And if they've got a better OC than they had last year, which I believe Joe Brady is, he'll be able to kind of scheme him open a little bit more, what have you. I think the big issue, though, back to the original point, was that last year their third and fourth wide receiver simply weren't getting open. Mm-hmm. I think a big part of it was they were not getting open. They weren't making difficult catches for Allen even in practice to where he could be like, I'm going to force this ball to him just because I know he can come down with it. I don't think they were doing any of it. I think as well, over the last few years, they've tried to get cute. Making Isaiah McKenzie their full-fledged slot receiver was a huge miss. It was a huge miss.
Now, Curtis Samuel, on the other hand, I think...
He has proven, though, in the league that he can do it. He just needs to stay healthy.
You're right.
That's been a big issue in his career.
I think with him specifically, with Samuel, it's... I don't know if he really... I haven't seen it, but I don't really know if he has the track record of making the difficult catch. But I think what Allen also missed last year was the... This guy will catch it every single time.
Yeah, he makes the easy.
Right.
Or he makes the hard look easy. He also makes the easy look easy.
Yeah, and I think back to Cole Beasley,
mm-hmm.
right, in that same slot role of catching pretty much everything that was thrown his way, whether it was hard or not. I just wonder with Samuel, like I said, I don't know if he can make that difficult catch, but... I also don't know if he's the player that would put Allen in a position to make a difficult throw.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll be able to give Allen...
Be consistent, the whole thing.
Yeah, he'll be able to give Allen that consistent, open target where, hey, this throw is going to be easy every single time,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to get 5-6 yards out of it. And I honestly, like I said, I think that's one of the main things he missed last year was not having that consistent target to throw the ball 6 yards on 2nd and 8.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's where you do add in like Samuel, Shakir, Kincaid, all these guys that have shown mm-hmm. they can get open and they do make consistent catches. I mean, you mentioned a lot that, you know, Shakir had what, like an 88% catch rate or something like that.
And I
think that's going to come down just due to volume.
I don't think it'll come down that much. I think it'll still stay above 70. There's another prediction for you. Happy?
There you go. I'm getting him out of here.
It'll stay above 70 because I think Shakir is that consistent. Look at, again, preseason pledge, but... His 5 targets in the first game caught all 5 of them, and 3 of them were probably...
Well, no, the first game went 3-for-3, and then the next game went 1-for-1.
3-for-3, sorry. I was thinking of Samuel and Shakir.
Had five targets and caught all five.
Shakir himself had 3 targets, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to think back to them, but I know there was one of them that was like a, wow, holy cow.
Went for 19 yards.
How did he come down with that sort of thing, and how did he make mm-hmm. a play out of that? But... And I'm not trying to, you know, be over-exaggerative. I just think that Shakir will be that consistent guy. I mean, we've seen even earlier in his career, in the few moments we've had for last season, there were these big plays that he's making. Granted, it's only a few, but that was, you know, his rookie year.
I wonder where he is at career-wise if his second year training camp was not a disaster.
Right.
And it's
like last year you're saying.
Yeah, from every report last year was his camp was bad. I mean, that's why we were talking about Andy Isabella.
Right.
We were talking about potentially Khalil Shakir
not even making the team.
And so that's and that's another thing that like just leaves me kind of like, oh man, like all right, that's not great cuz good receivers are good receivers. Like mm-hmm. you kind of know.
Right, but when you
they maybe can't get on the field, but you kind of know.
When you thrust someone into the spot like they had to do last year with Shakir and even Kincaid at times, you're going to find out what kind of player they really are. And I think that was part of Shakir's whole thing, maybe at training camp, most of the season last year, was that, well, target 1 is Diggs, target 2 is Davis, target 3 is kind of Kincaid, kind of Shakir, kind of Cook. Like, it was this weird hodgepodge.
Yeah.
And then at some point in the season, I mean, you can see it in the stats, I think it was week 10, 11, Shakir all of a sudden is, all right, you're going to get all these targets. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah, you're going to be a major factor.
There it is. He shows up and he does good. And I think that if you continue that trend of getting him more targets, getting him more involved in the offense, having him be one of, if not the centerpiece, it's going to be better for him as the player and better for the team as well. Because I think as you bring in that consistency, as you bring in those reps, you have him sort of stay fresh, if you want to call it that. Mm-hmm. It's not this, hey, we're going to pass you in the first quarter and then not again until the third quarter.
Then instead be a consistent part of the offense.
You're going to be a consistent part of the offense and stay locked in this whole time. Whereas before, it was kind of this in and out. You don't really know what's going to happen. So I think what we're going to see from Shakir this year is a lot similar to last year, just at a higher volume.
You know, it's interesting, too, looking at his offensive snaps from last year. In week one, 10%, then 15, 24, 28, 32, and then 39, you know, through the first 6 weeks. We've talked about it in the first game. No catches, no targets, nothing. And then for the next five games, he has five total targets, one in each. And then he has that 39% on the field, only one target for one catch, 13 yards. Then it's against New England. He's on it for 34% of the time, four catches, four targets, 35 yards. And then you see the jump, 65% against Tampa, 6 for 6, 92, 71 against Cincinnati, 4 for 4, 57, 76 against Denver, although only gets two targets, one catch for 24 yards, 74 against the Jets, four targets, three catches, 115 yards and a touchdown. Against Philadelphia, 80%, five targets, three catches, 47 yards, 61. So, I mean, it stays pretty consistent of like, okay, now he's above 45. I think the only game that he wasn't even above 50 was the Dallas game, where eventually the Bills just decided, well, they're not going to change their defense. Let's just keep running, and ultimately only gets one target. But then in the playoffs, against Pittsburgh, 67, 3 for 3, 31 yards. And then against Kansas City, 70%, 9 targets, 7 catches, 44 yards. So you've already kind of seen, like, now he is on the field more. I the reason why I bring up, like, his early careers, I do wonder, you know, where they had been in year two if, like, Shakir came in and took what was somewhat of a promising rookie year of, like, man, like, he looks all right. Like, he's making big plays. He was targeted in the playoff game. You know, comes down with that catch against Miami or what have you. You know, something big, you know, and continues that into year two. Are we looking at, you know, those first games? The first game against the Jets, he's on the field 10% of the time. You know, the Raiders, he's on it for 15%. Are you all of a sudden looking that, like, right away, he's on the field for 30, 40% of the time, and we can build, I guess, a better thesis here or a better argument? Because right now, yeah, a lot of it is hope. A lot of it is going off of they've lost 240 targets and 150 catches, and they've got to make that up somehow. Kincaid can only get so much. Curtis Samuel can only get so much. And Kincaid's the only receiver, or Shakir's the only receiver on this team that has caught passes from Josh Allen before this year. And so, like there's a lot of that, of just, like, he's somewhat the elder statesman of the wide receiver room in terms of the Bills offense, you know, and that's where I do get nervous of just great receivers show that they're great pretty soon. It does not, I think, take till year three for them typically to pop off. Some, yes, absolutely. It's progression is not linear. I get it. But I would say that was maybe my only fear with Shakir, is that to start year two, he was not only a non-factor, we were talking about a wide receiver that they just picked up willy-nilly, and it was kind of like, eh, maybe he's the guy and Shakir's not, because Shakir's having such a bad camp.
How much of this has to do with the Gabe Davis effect?
In what sense?
Because think back to 13 seconds, right? Gabe Davis has that incredible performance.
Yeah, okay.
And everyone's thinking, oh, this is the guy. This is our wide receiver two.
Here we go.
He might be the guy of the future after Diggs leaves, or whenever that happens. We'll have to wait and see. Let's just go into the next year and have fun with it, right? We all buy Gabe Davis jerseys, me and you specifically. And
love it.
We're all let down. And then it's like, oh, well, you know, okay. It was an up and down year. You know, the Bills were still great. He has time to figure it out. It's fine. Next year. Oh, he's just kind not of the same. There
yeah.
for 10 out of the 17 games, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that what happened there with Gabe Davis is kind of what's maybe on the minds of a lot of us out there. I mean, it's kind of on my mind a little bit, too, now that I've thought about it.
Is don't get too excited.
Don't get too excited, because look to what happened in the past.
Yeah.
But I think Gabe Davis and Khalil Shakir are different players. If that's,
I agree.
I mean, if that's agree. What yep. if that's what's affecting you, give us a call, 803-0550. I mean, if you're thinking, if you're worried about Shakir, if you're thinking that he's not going to be what we expect him to be because of somebody like Gabe Davis.
Yeah, is it maybe the holdback is that, you know, I've already bought into one wide receiver because of,
why am I buying into another?
Yeah, that ultimately is not a first or second round pick. I mean,
yeah.
Davis was a fourth, Shakir's a fifth.
Mm-hmm.
That always kind of plays into it a little bit. Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because I hadn't necessarily thought about it until you brought it up of, like, you know, we already did this with Davis, and it really didn't work out. Yeah.
But I think they're two very different players, play very mm-hmm. different styles. So at the end of the day, I'm actually not that worried about it, but it's definitely something that's in the back of my mind now.
Yep.
Of, we've seen this happen before. Could it happen again, just at a different type of wide receiver.
Yeah. 803-0550, number to call. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt here for about another half hour. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR.
I just want to say, you guys keep talking about a $20 million roster.
Yeah.
If you don't pay the right guys, you'd be out of luck.
That's life, baby. That's life.
Congratulations. You just broke the internet.
That was so much fun. There is former Alabama head coach Nick Saban on his debut.
Why is
college game day?
Old, those old coaches like Belichick and Nick Saban just now really popular just when they get on TV.
It's because they're good.
Because they can show their personality.
Yeah, they can finally show their personality. Not terrified of the media of taking anything out of context. But that was awesome.
Because they are themselves now the media.
That is so much fun. I think, who is he talking about with that?
The Michigan team. I think.
Was it Michigan?
Because I remember watching that video this morning and there was a Michigan graphic on the screen as he was talking. But I'm not sure.
I feel like it was A&M.
Really?
I think it's somebody in the ACC or in the SEC. But oh man, that was. I'm excited to see Saban on College Game Day. I think number one, he has a very. I mean, there was a video that came out of Saban looking very stoic and serious, and Pat McAfee literally right next to him is like dancing, getting ready for the segment.
Saban even gave him like a side eye a little bit, and everyone's like, "Oh, what's going on there?" And yeah. Even Pat McAfee's like, I was just vibing, and he was just kind of focused in on whatever he was doing, so it's fine.
Yeah, like he was getting ready. That was a lot of fun. I'm so glad college football is back. I know a lot of people know this about me. I'm a huge Texas fan, so like there was obviously some buildup for that. They beat up on Colorado State 52-0.
Thoughts on Arch Manning's first ever
awesome.
Touchdown pass?
Great. We were playing golf while it happened, and Zach dropped his phone out of the golf cart. I was teeing off, and Zach had to control himself for a second while I was swinging.
Well, as I'm like showing, your buddy who we're golfing with, I'm like, dude, look at it.
And I'm standing up in the tee box, like, what's happening?
It's awesome.
I'm missing it.
It's great.
Yeah. No, it was so funny. Like, and the pass, the play was just insane.
It's very good. He also had a rushing touchdown. Did have a fumble. Had a nice.
Nah. He didn't.
Yeah, his first pass went to Jonte Cook, who was pretty good. Ryan Wingo's a freshman wide receiver. They were getting involved. It was nice to see. They're on Game of the Week this week for both the Big Ten Network and ESPN's College Game Day against Michigan. They're going to the Big House, and I am horrified. The real quick point on this, I am terrified because, Josh, that line opened up earlier in the summer at 3.5, that Texas was favored by 3.5.
Ooh.
Which made sense. Michigan lost their head coach. It's going to be the second game. I'm blanking on their coach's name, but it's going to be his second game. They haven't figured out their quarterback. A lot of turnover. Michigan's kind of known as we more develop our players rather than it's immediate five-star studs, what have you. It is now ballooned to 7.5-point favorites for Texas on the road. It's a true road game. It is not like they're like in North Carolina or, in
Sharon
Indianapolis. Sharon Moore.
Yes, thank you.
He was their OC last year. I remember.
And
that
also,
he
coached Michigan the one game that Harbaugh was suspended
against Penn State. Yeah,
it Penn State?
Yeah, so he has a great win like in his resume, but so there's beliefs there, and now it's ballooned to 7.5, and I'm just, Josh, I'm terrified. It means nothing for your standings. I mean, they're going to host Georgia later on in this year. They obviously have Oklahoma later with the Red River. But I'm like, oh man, like I am going to be an emotional wreck if they do beat Michigan. Because, the new poll is going to come out, I think, in about a half hour, a little after noon. Probably two top 10 teams. Again, true road game. And but I was like this last year with Alabama, going into Tuscaloosa, I think week two or three. And I was just like, just get me through this. Mm-hmm. I feel bad. Like, I'm trying to get jazzed for like the Bills and Cardinals, and I am. But I'm like, it's week one. They'll survive if they lose. I'll be upset, and it will kind of be a little alarming, but they'll survive. Especially with college football. Yes, even the 12-team playoff, there will be this kind of feeling of you got to win like every game. Like, you're like allowed to lose like one, maybe two. And I see Georgia already on the schedule, and I'm like, you're probably losing that game. Like, you're probably losing that game. And I see Oklahoma on there, and I'm like, oh, man. Like, and then A&M, not great on offense, but that rivalry is being restored for the first time since 2011. And, like, that's going to be a whole thing just because it's a major rivalry that both teams have avoided for years, even in non-conference. So I'm nervous. 7.5-point favorites at the Big House on Saturday, noon kickoff.
thank goodness it's out of the way early. I don't have to wait till 7 at night.
Right. Yeah. That's the worst part about those games, too, is this, even any sporting event. It's I got to wait all day.
Right. That's part of what's killed me with primetime games, too, is like, you know, there are times I'm like, yeah, like I can now just like hang out and watch other football and what have you. It's like, if I have a rooting interest, I'm good. I don't really want to deal with
my
that.
My fantasy players aren't important in that game, then I'm good. I just want to watch the Bills play.
Exactly. We're talking a lot of predictions today. Me and Josh have kind of been given some as well. We've been hearing some of yours. Steve tweets in, my bold prediction for this season is that Josh Allen's completion percentage will be at 70%. He was close in 2020. That's true. He's at 69.2.
Wow.
But will he get it done? Will get it done this year? Let me check real quick on that Allen thing. And it was 69.2. Yes.
Wow.
And so he was very close that year as well, though they did have, you know, Stephon Diggs' first year, you had John Brown, you had Cole Beasley, Gabe Davis as well as on that roster. Like they had a lot of talent there, and that was, you know, Allen's ascension. Since then, he's kind of been hanging around 63%. Last year, he was at 66.5. I do agree, though, because I think they are going to go to the more short pass game. Mm-hmm. I think his completion percentage will jump up. I think 70%, though, would be a lot, and I'd almost be a little worried if it was that high. That just means they're not ever really pushing the ball down the field, and I don't want that a part of the game to disappear entirely. I think defenses are zeroing in on, you're not going to beat us in one play. I don't want that gone completely, and I think if you're up that high, it's kind
of
gone.
Well, it's like a lot of other things we've talked about this offseason. I think that it's okay if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to look at it's what do the rest of the stats say? Like before, when we talked about Dalton Kincaid's numbers for this coming season, and we talked about, oh, if he has like all these yards but no touchdowns, is it because, you know, he's getting them all the way to the red zone and then someone else like Ray Davis or even Josh Allen is just punching the ball in, mm-hmm. right? That's where I think it depends on other numbers. If he has a 70% completion rating or completion percentage, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
and is, you know, if he's mixing in that long ball every once in a while, if that hasn't disappeared, then I'm totally fine with it. But if the majority of that passing is the short game, I'm still okay with it because it's something we haven't seen the Bills be able to do effectively mm-hmm. in all of Allen's time here, really, except for the first couple of years with Beasley. And I mean, obviously John Brown wasn't part of the short game, but, but when Beasley and John Brown were here, that was some of the best offenses.
Mm-hmm.
And it also look at, I mean, Brian Daboll being there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, me and you have talked about it, though. I don't think the Bills really have yet. They haven't replaced John Brown.
No, but my point there was that was when this offense looked the most stable.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And obviously in the first year of Diggs, it was very good, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the Bills should go more in on those, you know, short game plays
rather than going for the long ball.
Right. They should definitely mix in that long ball.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying go away from it completely, but I think it's okay if you lean a little more on that short to medium game than you have in the past.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. I think you've seen the Chiefs, and I think the reason why, even when their wide receiver room was so bad, it didn't go away entirely. You saw that with Marquez Valdes-Scantling last year. But they went more to, we're going to kill you with, you know, death by a thousand cuts. And for me, one of the more frustrating parts comparing Mahomes and Allen has been Mahomes' complete willingness to really embrace that style of play, where Allen and maybe the Bills themselves have been, I guess, more hesitant to do so. They've fought against it much more, I think partially because they have a bazooka arm quarterback. I get it. But that was a big issue I had with Ken Dorsey. It's just, you know, they never really did the easy things. It was constantly hard. It was constantly down the field, even with guys that weren't getting open. But let's continue this wide receiver talk as we've got Joe on the line. Joe, good morning, my friend. How are we doing today?
Hello. How are you today?
Doing very well.
Good. I was really concerned when Davis left because I felt, in a sense, that Diggs hogged the ball, and I thought that he played a lot on Josh Allen's mind about getting him the ball, and I thought that created a lot with, you know, missing targets, and when Davis could have been the number one target, that would have made up for all the issues that they had. So I was really sad to see him leave. And I'm not saying where he is now he'll be a primary target, but I really believed in our system he would have just made up for all our things that we're talking about now.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for the call. I just I
can't agree. Every time his role got bigger, he seemed to get smaller. You know, he never got past, I think, even 55%, you know, success rate in terms of targeting him, let alone catch rate. He was a guy that once he got past the third, fourth wide receiver role on the team, you saw his limitations. He just did not catch the ball consistently enough. He did not have a complete route tree. And even in games where we saw, like, oh, man, they're targeting him 9-10 times. This is great. It never was the next week. He was just not consistent enough. I think realistically we'd be having the same conversations because it would be like, what has shown you in Davis's 4 years with the Bills up to that point that he could all of a sudden become that number one guy? I think honestly we'd be having the same conversations. Really, I think the conversations would be, we can't expect, you know, more than 80 catches out of Gabe Davis because, I mean, when he's been targeted 90 times, he gets like 50 of them, maybe. And I think that is maybe the most frustrating thing with Gabe Davis is that you got a dude in the fourth round. I mean, he came into his rookie year and I think had 6-7 touchdowns. That's awesome coming out of the fourth round. The problem was he seemingly, I'm not saying he did, but he seemingly never became a better wide receiver. He kind of just stagnated and to a certain extent stayed the same. His stats would tell you effectively stayed the same.
There is a part of me too that wonders what a different offense would have made him look like, because his success came with the Brian Daboll offense in 13 seconds. And was that just kind of the perfect system for him, right? Was it Daboll knew how to unlock his potential, if you want to call it that, and it wasn't translated very well to a guy like Ken Dorsey or even to Joe Brady as well. And I do think about that sometimes, but I don't really know. I think it's more on the player at this.
It does get to a certain point.
I think it's more the player, and it depends on what happens here in Jacksonville now with him. But Jacksonville is just not the offense that I would put him in. Jacksonville has always looked shaky in this Trevor Lawrence era, mm-hmm. and that's not what Gabe Davis needs. Gabe Davis needs consistency. Gabe Davis needs, you know.
And Gabe Davis had consistency.
Right.
And ultimately, he was okay. He was a solid wide receiver.
Well, that's
league.
What I mean. I mean, mm-hmm. even with consistency, he still had trouble. So I'm really interested to see, was it somehow the offensive system he was in here, or was it the player?
Mm-hmm. 803-0550 is the number to call. Got to take a quick timeout before we come back and wrap up today's show. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones and Josh Schmidt. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Before we run out of time here, let's go back to the phones. We've got Danielle on the line. Danielle, how are we doing today?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well.
Doing good.
Very good. Now, please understand this is all remains to be seen, but I do feel that you are going to see a way happier Josh Allen on the field this season for the simple fact that I do feel that he had the pressure of Diggs wanting to be targeted every single play, and it was just impossible to do. You just couldn't do it. And I believe that also every time Diggs was screaming at Josh, it wasn't to pump Josh up. I mean, he was pissed at him because he wouldn't give him the ball.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't give him the ball. And, you know, he's going to a different team now, and he's not going to be targeted at every – he ain't 24 years old, and he's not going to be targeted at every throw in Houston. I'm sorry. I don't think it's going to happen, and I think you're going to see a way more relaxed, happier Josh when he knows that he has numerous guys to go to and not just one guy creating tons of pressure thinking he's got to make the Hall of Fame, he's got to have 1,000 catches, and – I just think that Josh felt that pressure of that as a team player that Josh is was wanting to help Diggs. But in the end, I think it hurt all of us. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see a way different, again, remains to be seen, but a way different player in Josh this season.
Yeah, Danielle, thanks for the call. And that's kind of what me and Josh were getting to a little bit earlier, where it's like the vibes feel different. You know, everyone's smiling, they're happy. Last year, it felt so exhausting that, like, just every, you know, of course, you have, you know, Sean McDermott kind of stepping in a little bit at OTA saying that, you know, Diggs was missing, but it was an excused absence, but there was kind of a fight or a conversation, what have you, between the two, and that's why he left. And there was a lot going around. I think as well a big issue, and Daniel, you sort of brought it up too, is he's got a lot of guys to throw the ball to. I think that was a big issue too, that to a certain extent it became Diggs and no one else. I mean, we talked about Gabe Davis there not really being consistent. We've talked today about Trent Sherfield and Deontay Hardy, neither of them eclipsing 30 targets last year, and they were the wide receiver 3 and 4 for at least to start the year.
I also wonder, with Diggs last year compared to this year, how much of it has to do with the mentality that he was taking under. Or take, you know what I'm saying?
Undertaking,
yeah. There's the word. How much of it was his mentality there, knowing that he was the guy? Now when he's in Houston, he knows, hey, there's younger guys ahead of me. I'm going to be wide receiver 3 probably, and I'm okay with that because I'm at this point in my career, I'm going to be playing with a great quarterback that's just as good as, or projects to be just as good as Josh Allen.
Could be.
He's not there yet. I almost said that, but he's not there yet. But he projects to be as good as Josh Allen. And now he doesn't have to be in the same high-pressure situations every game. I think if I'm Diggs, that's the change in mentality there. In mindset of, I don't have to be number one anymore. I don't have to be so highly competitive. He's going to be competitive, but he doesn't have to be that competitor anymore.
But I wonder if a lot of the stress... You know, we talk a lot about that with, you know, Allen only had one guy to throw to. I wonder if Diggs felt the stress of, I'm the only guy consistently getting open here. And all of a sudden, you know, towards the end of the year, it wasn't really working. Even throwing the ball to Diggs a lot. I know Sneaky Joe's brought this stat up too, of like, they still threw Diggs the ball. Mm-hmm. It wasn't effective. Wasn't working.
Well, that's my point with the whole, you know, other people around him sort of mentality, is he can still perform in these big moments. It's just not as important because he's not the number one. He's not the only guy getting open. He's not the only guy catching the ball.
No, I mean, we're saying this in a positive light. We'll see. I expect him to be the third option, at least in the wide receivers, for CJ Stroud to throw to, and we'll see how he handles that.
Right, and also if, you know, Tank Dell, Nico Collins, if they don't perform, if Diggs has to be the number one, are we going to see this other mentality, this other side of him? If there is such a thing, if this is how it all worked out, are we going to see that come out? Are we going to see him kind of change back to what he was here? If all of that is true, because that's just me speculating. That's just me thinking a competitor's mindset might change a little bit.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for the calls, everyone. That's going to do it for me and Josh today. We'll be back on tomorrow from 10-12 as we are one day closer to Bills versus Cardinals on Sunday afternoon. Have a great rest of your day, everyone. Coming up next, Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again?
With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.